you know, applying to be on the Planning Commission.
I would also say what's well known to council, but just for the viewing audience, we have very strict rules on the commission about not a, a member recusing himself or herself from any action for which their employer, whether they're self-employed or employed, as in Jill's case, by a development entity, they must recuse themselves from the proceedings, not only from a vote, but from the entire discussion at the commission. So that's just for public knowledge. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have anybody sign up to testify?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Anybody here who wished to testify to this matter? Could one of you folks make way for the testifier?
Good morning. I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. The issue here is the balance of interests represented on the Planning Commission. If the two nominees are approved today, there will be five members who profit from development, two who don't on the commission. That's not balanced. It is a judgment call for the council as to whether or not there are two members of the Planning Commission principally employed in land development. It's a matter of policy, not any question of the virtue of the planning commissioners or nominees involved. I have great respect for both Paul Schlesinger and Don Hansen, the two current members of the Planning Commission whose work is principally development. I don't know Jill Sherman, but she sounds like a wonderful person who would be a great choice for the commission's next developer. The code requires a broad representation of Portland's community on the Planning Commission and allows only two members to be principally in developing of real estate for profit. The definition of this development in the zoning code says construction is development, meaning people who work on the site would be developers while applicants would not. That clearly doesn't make sense in this context. Neither does the Bureau of Planning's contention that only landowners, the clients of OTAC, are developers. When the 600-acre Forest Heights subdivision was approved in the early 1990s, absentee owners Nauru Phosphate Royalties didn't negotiate and advocate for the approval by the City of Portland. Don Hansen did. When Don was appointed to the Planning Commission, the Daily Journal of Commerce wrote an article titled, "Veteran Developer Hansen Takes Seat on Planning Commission." I've provided copies for you. Gil Kelly is quoted as saying, "Don has good practical experience in the development business." When I mentioned to a fellow land use volunteer that the Bureau of Planning doesn't consider Don a developer, her response was, "Well, then what is he?" If Don isn't a developer, what professional slot does he fill so that the public will know when there's a second one on the Planning Commission and that profession has its two spaces? The principle at stake is the balance of interests on the Planning Commission. I agree with the Bureau of Planning that not all professionals who provide development services to applicants are developers. Lawyers, architects, etc. may help with applications before council, and I wouldn't call them developers. The core question regarding whether Don Hansen is principally involved in developing real estate for profit is a matter of degree, and the key word is principally. If a person is listed as the applicant in multiple development applications, plans the development applications, advocates for their approval, is referred to as a veteran developer in the city's newspaper of record, and has the title Manager of Development Services in a firm that provides services to for-profit developers, I think that makes that individual principally involved in developing real estate for profit. I believe there isn't space on the Planning Commission for a third developer at this time, and ask that the very worthy nomination of Jill Sherman be postponed until one of the two developers currently serving retires.
What is the slot that Mr. Hansen fills?
Again, the question is what slot Mr. Hansen fills. We don't have designated slots, that is for teacher, for neighborhood activist, for artist. For what we do is to steer clear of preclusions of having more than two in any given profession.
I see. So there isn't a requirement that you have certain positions, just a requirement you not have more than two people
correct.
In the same.
Further questions? Call the vote. No, well, let's do them one by one. On 702.
Adams?
Well, I think Commissioner Leonard and Amanda Fritz are raising some important questions and concerns about this. And I think that my direction to the Planning Commission, or my request to the Planning Commission, if the next two appointments come in, sort of with this concern as part of your screening process. But I am going to support Jill Sherman for appointment to the Planning Commission. She's addressed any concerns that I've had on the record about any sort of bias and a willingness to vote against her friends and colleagues, which I have to do almost every council meeting, is a requirement of a good public servant. And I know that the questions that Commissioner Leonard raised and Amanda Fritz raised are not personal to you, but I think they're fair, and you've addressed my concerns. Aye.
Leonard?
Yeah, and I really appreciated Ms. Sherman's responses to Sam's questions, because they gave me a level of comfort in her approach. And I'm going to be checking with Gil to see how this process is coming of clearly defining who is what in various professions, so hopefully we can avoid this kind of thing in the future. But I very much appreciate Ms. Sherman's willingness to serve. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think it was a very good discussion on some interesting points that we need to take into account, but I'm certainly very happy to support Jill Sherman, to support anybody who really is willing to take the time to serve on the Planning Commission, because it is probably one commission that requires the most reading and meetings of any city-appointed advisory committee we have. So welcome. Aye.
Potter.
Thank you for being willing to serve. I vote aye. Please read 703.
Adams.
Thrilled. Some, I don't know Jill, but I know Catherine, and smart, tough, fair, balanced, willing to stand her ground and compromise based on principle. Aye.
Leonard.
I agree. Look forward to having Catherine down at the Planning Commission. It'll be a great addition. Aye.
Saltzman.
Welcome you too.
Potter.
Aye. Thank you, folks. Please read item 704.
Appoint Stephen Peacock to the Portland Urban Forestry Commission for a term to expire December 31, 2010, and reappoint Michael Harrison for another four-year term to expire June 30, 2011.
As Mayor, I request the council confirmation of the following appointment of Stephen Peacock, appointed from June 07 to December 2010, and the reappointment of Michael Harrison, June 2007 to June 2011. Are either of these folks here? Okay. Is anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Anybody here who wished to testify on the appointment to the Forestry Commission? Okay, this is a report. I need a motion to accept.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 705.
Amend an intergovernmental agreement with the Port of Portland related to Portland International Airport and increase allowable compensation up to $819,804 to reimburse the city for cost related to a 34-month joint city and port planning process titled Airport Futures.
I would like to pull this item because staff has additional information that they would like to share with the council before the vote. Please come forward.
Yes, Gil Kelly with the Bureau of Planning, and with me is Jay Sugnet, project manager for the airport planning project. Council members may have also received a letter from the director of the port, and that's essentially what we wanted to convey. If you hadn't had a chance to read that yet, they have pulled the agreement from the Port Commission's agenda that was scheduled for today and have postponed that to July 11th. In the letter, they say they understand and respect the action of the council at your last meeting regarding the membership of the planning advisory group. But given the change, they would like some time to consider that and to speak with some members of the council as well as some other regional stakeholders. So I think it's just prudent for us to defer our action until we get a little bit more clarity on where the Port would like to go with this. Again, understanding this has been a negotiated piece all along, and clearly the council has the absolute right to say what it would like to have happen here. But I think it's probably in the council's best interest to see where the port would like to head with this. I'm not sure they're entirely clear at the moment what their reaction will be, except that they'd like to defer it from today to July 11th for their commission. And it might be good to know, good for you to know sort of where they're headed before you take your final action on it.
I'm more than willing to hold this over until after the vote by
Well, I don't know if it's necessary to wait until after they vote, but I think it'd be nice to get a bit more clarity from the port director as to where, what issues they're most concerned and where they're sort of headed with this. We have, given the port's delay, we have postponed the June 22nd, 26th kickoff for the process. That will likely occur now in September when people are back from summer vacations.
Any discussion?
Yes. Commission members? Yes. I did talk with the port director yesterday. I've had another conversation with Gil. And I fear that this process has become blurry to some. And from my perspective, I need to, I think, get on the record some clarifications of misunderstandings that occur with the port and even our own Bureau of Planning about what our role is in this process. We ultimately, as a council, will go into a quasi-judicial forum where we take evidence as to whether or not and testimony as to whether or not to grant the port a conditional use permit on what they may want to see happen at the port in terms of land use. That's our role in this process. The recommendations that come out of this committee, as was explained last week, will take two tracks. They'll go to the Port of Portland Commission in terms of their overall strategic plan for the future. And Gil explained last time that those recommendations relevant to the zoning code and possible amendments to it will go to the Planning Commission and into the City Council. But both of those are coming out of this process. So what concerns me right now is there seems to be some confusion on the part of the port what our role as a City Council is. And I appreciate being collaborative and working with the port, but we have a charge under the statute in terms of how we make land use decisions here, and ultimately that's what they want out of us. So in my conversation with the executive director of the port yesterday, he indicated that given that we've added some neighborhood folks, he may go to Clackamas County, have them add some folks, he may go to Washington County, have them add some folks, and he may go to Clark County and have them add some folks. So I want to be clear that you understand what I told him, and that is that's fine, they can add whoever they want, but in terms of our process, and in terms of us getting recommendations as to what we amend into the zoning code, we'll decide that. Clackamas County doesn't decide that. Washington County doesn't decide that. Clark County doesn't decide that. And the Port of Portland doesn't decide that. We decide that based on testimony we receive, including from Portland citizens. And that's gotten blurry.
Well, it certainly is not blurry in our minds. And we described that during a slide, I think, when you stepped out of the council meeting briefly last time, that the two tracks, and it's very clear, actually, it's not quasi-judicial, it will be legislative, but that is totally within the purview of the City Council.
It gets appealed, guess
and,
what it is.
And we'll
if
make,
it gets appealed.
No, the legislation actually comes to you for approval.
Right, so, but then if it gets appealed, if it gets challenged, ultimately it comes back to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
In both
in a quasi-judicial hearing.
No, it's a legislative, would be a legislative
remand.
Be
appealed
if
to
it would appeal, yeah, if it were appealed to Luba. If your legislative action were appealed, it would be remanded to you as a further legislative action. But it's conceivable the legislation could develop requirements for subsequent permitting that could be quasi-judicial.
But
for
the point
specific
is that
projects.
We have a very specific role
absolutely.
In this that's prescribed by statute.
Absolutely.
And my sense is that some are approaching this as though it's a collaborative process. And it is in terms of us helping the port develop their strategic plan. That is absolutely right.
Right.
And I'm almost wondering if it doesn't make more sense for us to have two completely different groups that look at both of those issues. We have a group that looks at the part that we vote on, and we have a group that works with them in a collaborative process and the communities surrounding Portland in developing a strategic plan. But we've we've mixed the two, and it just feels to me like there is some confusion about ultimately what our role is. And we have a very, very, at least I take very serious part in land use decisions. If we agree to a third runway, I don't want it to be because, you know, the commission, this group was weighted with Clackamas County folks and Washington County folks and Clark County folks, and we, as the city of Portland, who have this great asset in our backyard, really have no say in how the land use decision goes. I mean, that just can't be.
Well, we agree with you, Commissioner, and we'll make it very clear to this group about the two aspects that they're advising on. And one is very, one is narrower because it's the short-term piece that the city will be adopting. And we've already said at the outset that will not include a third runway. Everybody's clear about that. Okay. The long-term strategic plan for the port probably will do it, include a discussion in the far-out term of a third runway. And I think the port actually is looking for advice from this group, including the City of Portland neighborhood representatives, about what that long-term strategic plan should look like. Yeah. And so I think we're just going to be very careful, as you've pointed out, in those meetings, on those agendas, to say, now, which portion are we actually advising on today? Are we advising on the legislative piece, or are we advising to the port
That's
on their
exactly
long-term
what I
piece?
Wanted to hear you say. That's exactly the right approach, is to just make that clear. So, because I think that I am pretty sure that in the port's mind, they're a little fuzzy about that there are two distinct tracks there, and I would appreciate you clarifying that. That'd be great.
We'll take that as a charge. Thank you.
What are you suggesting, Gil, in terms of coming back to the council? If we're going to continue this, we have to have a date that we
move. Oh, correct. Do you think we need to wait till after July 11th? No? Does it make any difference if we wait?
June 27th.
I think we'd like to continue at this point to June 27th, and if if we still don't have good information, we'd ask for a further extension beyond that time. But I think in the next couple weeks, we'll be able to get clarity from the port.
When will you be
that
back?
Help the process.
Well, we could find another
I'll be back
date.
July 5th.
We could. Any reason we can't do it on July 5th? No, July 5th would be fine.
Actually, I get back on July 5th.
So what is the date around
Thursday?
We'll email it to you in Rome.
Commissioner Stan.
What is it?
July 11th.
Is the next date?
Is the next date, but Commissioner Stan's gone.
It's difficult.
July 11th it works for us.
I think you ought to just schedule it. And I think we're all on the same page. I really do. I think we've had great discussions the last 2 weeks. I think I had a productive discussion with Bill Wyatt yesterday, and I think, although I don't think he was 100% pleased with my message, I think he understood it, and I think we're moving in the right direction.
To the extent that we hear anything before you leave town, we'll let you know that.
Okay. And if there's a phone number we can contact.
Yeah.
You're not getting it.
So then we would set it up then for...
Just send him an email. He'll respond.
Is it June 20, June 27th?
July.
No.
You want to go ahead and go to the June? Jay, do you want to go to June
27th? Is that okay, Commissioner Leonard?
Yes.
Commissioner Leonard is gone.
Okay. Set it for that date. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for your work.
Please read the next item.
Item 706, adopt administrative rules for city travel and miscellaneous expenses.
Please come forward.
Maybe Mayor, a suggestion, given the time and for some reason people are here not to listen to these issues, but another one later in the agenda, is it possible that you could highlight the changes to the existing policies?
Yes, we were actually going to be very brief given your agenda this morning. My name is Tom Feely. I'm with the Office of Management Finance. With me is Barbara Kunkel, Executive Assistant to the Fire Chief and Travel Coordinator for the Fire Bureau, and Tom Fitzgerald from the Water Bureau representing our customers. The administrative rules before you and being approved by the ordinance stem out of BIP 14, out-of-town travel and miscellaneous expenditures, one of the mayor's Bureau innovation projects. We had a committee established that had representatives from multiple bureaus. We looked at the existing travel policy, which was long and somewhat confusing. We basically rewrote it, cut it in half, took out a lot of items that weren't really related out of town travel, but they were miscellaneous expenditure related, put them in a separate administrative rule. We also recommended the switch from reimbursement based on actual receipts for meals and incidentals to a per diem system, which the federal government uses. What we tried to do was reduce time and process, basically accounting processing by the traveler as well as the financial staff in the various bureaus. I think employees will get reimbursed sooner as a result of this. It'll be easier. The IRS per diem rates are on a website. They're set. They're easy to understand. The city spends about $1 million in travel, which, you know, in the overall scheme of the general fund isn't huge, but it's still a pretty big chunk of money. So we presented our findings to the BIP implementation committee in December, and they approved it at that point. Since then, we've gone through the administrative rule process. It's been reviewed by hundreds of people, probably, and we got a lot of opinions back. We've made some modifications to allow exceptions. The bureau heads can make exceptions for employees who have economic hardship in terms of payment and advances. So I think the real critical thing is we streamlined it, and we're going to a per diem, or we're recommending we go to a per diem system. And actually, I've got Tom Fitzgerald here to talk from a customer standpoint and a little bit about per diem.
Thank you, Tom. Mayor Potter and members of council, my name is Tom Fitzgerald, and I'm the accounting manager for the Water Bureau. I administer city travel policy and manage administrative staff who are engaged in processing employee travel expense claims for the Water Bureau. And I've spent the majority of my career as an accounting manager in the public sector with responsibilities for travel expense reimbursement processes under both an actual expense receipt-based system similar to that currently used by the city and a per diem method. Based on my experience under both systems, I'm confident that the per diem system will significantly reduce the time and effort involved in all phases of travel processing. It will reduce the time spent by city administrative staff in processing travel and enable them to spend more time on other fiscal management and administrative functions. More importantly, the administrative burden and time spent by employees to document travel expenses will be greatly reduced. The per diem system will eliminate the requirement for city employees to obtain and submit receipts for meals and itemize individual meal costs on their travel expense claims, providing them with more time to perform the services they provide to the community. I believe that employees, managers, and administrative staff involved in travel will welcome the change to the per diem method, and I think it's a real positive for the city. Thank you.
So with that, we'll answer any questions you might have.
Questions from the commissioners.
So there's no exceptions to the per diem. I mean, the per diem, you get the certain amount for dinner, and if you go over, it's out of your pocket.
Okay. Unless there's some extraordinary event, in that case, the bureau director can make an exception. But that's the way it works. Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, folks.
Okay.
Do we have a sign-up sheet?
Oh, we did. No one signed up.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
I just want to commend the VIP project team, number 14, and the mayor for streamlining this process and making it work better, but also maintaining accountability to taxpayers. Aye.
Potter.
I'd also like to thank the members of VIP 14. And also, it's really good to see a travel policy that we can know that it's really takes care of both of the employees and also the fiduciary responsibilities of the city. Aye. Please read the next item.
707, pay claim of Bryant Moore.
Mayor very brief description of the name of the place.
Randy Stenquist, Risk Management Services. This is a fairly straightforward motor vehicle accident that occurred last May involving a Portland Fire Bureau truck striking a parked vehicle, passenger car, in Northeast Portland. The claimant, Mr. Moore, was injured in that collision between those two vehicles. He sustained medical expenses exceeding $7,600, and he is represented by an attorney. The attorney has presented a demand against the city. We have reviewed all of his medical records and reached a compromise settlement in the amount of $11,500, which would be inclusive of all of his medical bills and attorney fees and costs. We're recommending settlement of the claim at that amount. We feel the settlement at that level will certainly be cheaper than the cost of litigation should the case proceed there.
Questions from the commissioners? Was there anyone sign up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Anyone here who wished to testify on this matter? It's an emergency vote, so we have to wait for Sam to come back. But go ahead and please explain the next one. Are you going to?
I'll defer to Becky Chow from my own.
I'll read the item 708, pay claim of Cassandra Schreiber.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Becky Chow with Risk Management. This is an ordinance to pay a little over $13,000 for car repairs and car rentals resulting from a collision between a police car and a vehicle driven by Cassandra Schreiber. This was a fairly new officer who ran a stop sign when he was distracted by his MDT terminal at the intersection of 62nd and Duke. The police bureau reviewed the incident and found it to be preventable. The officer was very apologetic. It was his first accident. And the insurance company paid for the repairs and then made a demand to us to reimburse them. This ordinance would do so. Ms. Schreiber does have some bodily injuries. She's still receiving treatment, and we'll have to follow up with another ordinance to pay for that.
Questions from the commissioners? Is there a sign-up sheet?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Is there anybody here who wished to testify on this matter? Okay, returning to 707, emergency vote, please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Now to 708.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 709.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment of 45 replacement patrol sedans for the use of the Portland Police Bureau.
Are they biodiesel?
I doubt it.
Are they biodiesel? Are they hybrids?
Doesn't say.
I'm kidding about it.
Okay, this is an emergency vote. Is there anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Okay. Anybody here who wishes to testify on this matter? Please call. Go ahead.
I mean, I guess I do feel we should know whether they looked at hybrid or biodiesel.
I think that's a good discussion to have, but my thought was that police cars were worried about performance and in terms of horsepower.
I don't really think they make any full-size sedans that are hybrid. Okay. And obviously a diesel engine in a police vehicle wouldn't.
Okay, well, I guess I'll accept those explanations, but I think in the future we need explanations that they've actually made the effort to look, not the police bureau, but any bureau purchasing vehicles. But that's, otherwise this will be fine.
Okay. Please call the vote.
So to those responsible for this item, you've heard the legislative intent from council is if you can find green options to get them, even for this particular order. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Read item 710.
Amend contract with MCA Architects PC to provide additional architectural and engineering consulting services for the remodel of fire stations 15, 24, and 43.
My name is Rich Attridge. I'm a project manager for the Office of Management and Finance Facilities Division, working on behalf of the Fire Bureau for the construction, remodel, seismic upgrades at Station 15, 24, and 43. This amendment will provide additional architectural and engineering services for the completion of the upgrade of the stations at 15, 24, and 43. The total construction cost for those three stations is $2.9 million. The total compensation for MCA architects will, with this amendment, bring it up to $348,370, which is 12% of the construction costs. Typically, architectural and engineering fees range from 12% to 15% of construction costs. So, have any questions?
Any questions? Does anybody sign up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Anybody here who wished to testify this matter? This is a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read item 711.
Amend intergovernmental agreement with Oregon Department of Transportation for the Union Station facility improvements.
It's a second reading vote only.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Item 712.
Declare surplus property located at 3620 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Second reading vote only.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Item 713.
Accept bid of James W. Fowler Company for the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Cogeneration Facility project for $4,274,795.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter, members of City Council. I'm Jeff Baer. I'm the director of the Bureau of Purchases. And before you is a recommendation to award this Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant cogeneration facility for the Bureau of Environmental Services to the James W. Fowler Company in the amount of $4,274,795. And a couple of points to make note of is that in their subcontracting of this project, they have 4.7% minority women emerging small business participation in subcontracting. They also have two other divisions of work that they've not identified as who they're going to subcontract with, and we're working with them to make sure that they apply the good faith effort program and to look for MWESB firms to use those two different divisions of work. They are also in full compliance with the equal benefit requirements, and with that, we also have representatives from BES if there are any project questions.
Any questions, commissioners? Is anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Is anybody here who wishes to testify on this matter? This is a report. Need a motion to accept and second.
Move.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I just want to pause and point out that this is really a good project. This is going to take, at our treatment plant, waste gas, methane that contributes to greenhouse gases, and use it to produce power, to power facilities at the treatment plant. So it's a really green investment, and I know it's started under my tenure at BES. I'm glad to see it being finished under Commissioner Adams' tenure, but it really is a good thing for our environment, and it also saves us the city money that we would otherwise be buying power from utilities for. Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 714.
Create a local improvement district to construct street and bridge improvements from the Columbia Slough to Alderwood Road in the Northeast 92nd Drive Local Improvement District.
Mr. Mayor, with your permission and the concurrence of council, I'd like to continue this item to July 24th.
Any objections?
Why? I'm ready to vote on this.
Right.
We've had this around long enough. I don't really want to see it again.
I'm not ready to vote, so.
What is the point of continuing it then?
So that we can have the full council here to vote on it.
Is there
a I made a request.
Time limit on this?
So okay, I'll defer. Like I said, I'm ready to kill this LID. I don't think anybody's in support of it. But if Commissioner Adams wants more time to full counsel to do that, then it's fine with me.
You're very generous, Commissioner Saltzman. Thank you.
Any other discussion? We'll set it over to
July. July 25th. July 25th.
Please read item 715.
Declare it to be unlawful to paint, tape, or otherwise mark public property or leave objects in the right-of-way without a permit for the purpose of reserving space for a parade event.
I have a resolution I would like to introduce and turn the gavel.
I wonder if I could ask you to hold off on that and just till I make some opening remarks, and then that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Potter, members of the council. Depending on your perspective, this is good or bad, but I've received more communications on the subject of taping spots on the sidewalk than any other single thing I have ever worked on times 10. Clearly has touched a nerve in Portland, and I've gotten a variety of responses, some of which I can't read here. One letter, however, I actually am very happy to share with you that was sent to me by the mayor of Gresham. Dear Commissioner Leonard, I couldn't help but notice your recent comments regarding Gresham residents attending the Grand Floral Parade in Portland. In the spirit of fun, I've got to say that your words bordered on the grumpy. The Rose Festival and the Grand Floral Parade are enjoyed by people from around the world. I'm sure that you are proud of your city, and you ought to be, but I would hope you appreciate that the millions of dollars of economic activity that is generated within your borders. I want to extend an open invitation to Portlanders, Vancouverites, and everybody else in the region to come to our 25th annual Teddy Bear Parade in Gresham on September 29th. This is one of our most enjoyable community events, and this year will be no exception. Further, I'd like to invite you, Commissioner Leonard, to join me in the Teddy Bear Parade as an effort to show our regional solidarity. I might even be able to talk our fire department into letting you ride on the truck. Of course, if you would rather just be a spectator, we would be happy to tape off a special spot just for you. Sincerely, Shane T. Bemis, Mayor of Gresham. I had the distinct pleasure of writing back Mr. Bemis to accept his invitation, and for the record, I want to read that as well. Dear Mayor Bemis, I appreciate your letter inviting me to the Teddy Bear Parade on September 29th. I heartily accept your invitation because, as you know, Gresham is very nearly the best city in Oregon. That is why I'm planning to annex you next spring using duct tape, which I will have affixed around your boundary. Apparently, the duct tape will help us avoid a lot of the nasty legal mumbo-jumbo and just get to the business of acquiring you. In the meantime, I am hopeful that you are serious about allowing me to ride in the parade aboard one of your Gresham fire apparatus, as I feel I may need the protection of my brother firefighters and sisters to escape the parade without injury. Finally, I wanted to address my comments, which were perceived by you and your citizens to be grumpy. For the record, that was me attempting humor, which I should not do because although I laugh a lot, I am not funny. Your letter, on the other hand, was very humorous, and I am hopeful that we can have lunch soon and perhaps you could consider giving a neighboring commissioner a few lessons. I appreciated Mayor Bemis's nice scolding of me. But what I learned in this debate is that it actually, people take it very, very seriously. I've had reports over the last number of years of people who have had physical confrontations on the parade route, including families that arrive as early as 5:30 or 6 a.m., only to have themselves evicted from a place that had been taped off by somebody up to 2 weeks before that arrived at 9 a.m. Sometimes Portlanders, being as they are polite and leave without comment. Sometimes Portlanders are a little bit more like me and can't keep their mouth shut and end up getting into a verbal confrontation that has, on a number of occasions, led to physical confrontations, including a couple of years back, a man who was standing in somebody else's quote-unquote taped-off area on crutches, and the confrontation got so serious that the man's crutches were grabbed from him and thrown out into the parade route. So this has left for me the area of fun and has become an issue of public safety. And my role, as all of ours is up here, is to make sure that the community is safe and everybody has equal access to enjoy our parade on the same level basis. I was interested to see that on the news, one woman was interviewed who for a number of years has had a tradition in her family of taping off three separate areas a week before the parade. And on the day of the parade, she arrives with her family and friends and picks which one of the three spots would best suit her and her family at that time. This last time on Craigslist was an advertisement for sale, selling spots that had been taped off to the highest bidder at the parade. And finally, this isn't really an issue just between people who tape and don't tape. There are altercations that have occurred between people who tape. One family has had a historical spot on a specific corner for a number of years that they've taped off in advance of the parade, only to arrive this year to find that their tape had been removed and replaced by somebody else's tape with their name on it. When the first family came back and saw that, they removed that tape, reapplied their tape with their name on it, and then erected a tent over the spot to make it clear that it was their spot. So I think this has to stop. I grew up here in Portland, and it's been interesting to me the number of folks who have said, you're destroying a tradition of the Rose Festival Parade. That's not accurate. The tradition of the Rose Festival Parade has been families get up as early as 5 a.m. or even earlier, head down to the parade route with their lawn chairs and blankets and snacks and hot chocolate, and stake out a spot that they sit in until the parade starts. And to be very clear, anybody who is willing to invest their body in a spot for as long as they want, in my view, that is their spot. The more recent phenomena of the taping off has hit some people wrong right along, but it's actually got to the point where I think it's actually going to lead to something worse than crutches being thrown into the parade unless the council does something. The mayor is prepared to propose a substitute resolution, and I'm going to do my best here in a short little time I have to try to persuade him not to do that. Basically, his resolution calls for the Rose Festival Association to conduct a process over the next 6 months to come up with recommendations that come back to the council. What I've committed to the mayor to do is, if this ordinance that I'm proposing passes as it is, and I hope that it does, that I will happily convene a group in my office that includes representatives of the Rose Festival Association, that includes representatives from the Business Alliance, and importantly includes representatives of the community, to talk about what exceptions, if any, there should be. And frankly, I've heard some reasons to have some exceptions that I think make sense. For an example, I think the argument that has been made to me by a number of elderly citizens is they are currently intimidated to go to the parade, because they find themselves there early, they get a spot only to have somebody later on in the morning tell them that they are in their spot. They leave and never come back. That's not appropriate. I've had some folks that are handicapped say, you know, in this debate, it would be nice to have a reserved area for handicapped citizens that is actually a distinct area that citizens can go to. I think that is a great idea, and I'd like to see something like that even interspersed at different spots throughout the parade for handicapped citizens and seniors. So I do think there are areas we can come back and make some changes, but I'd like to pass this today. I'd like to bring those changes back right after the first of the year, after I go through a process that I think is more appropriately, frankly, conducted by the city than any private organization. And hopefully that at that point we'll have made changes that are acceptable to all the interested parties and balanced. Thank you.
So I would like to introduce the resolution and I hand the gavel over to Randy. Use it sparingly.
Okay. You're out of order.
So are you moving that as a substitute, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, I am. I'd move to suspend the rules to introduce the resolution, and I think this resolution will provide the community an opportunity to resolve this issue at the community level rather than at the city level. I think that I really appreciate what Commissioner Leonard has done in terms of bringing this issue forward, but it's really more about duct tape than just that alone. Marching in the parade on Saturday, in between wiping the rain out of my eyes, I observed a number of interesting things along the way. First, that there are many viewing stands that are erected by different groups along the way. There are also, I found, a large 50-foot trailer that had a canvas side that had been pulled up alongside of the street, and there were a group of people observing from that vantage point. I found a tent with a bunk bed inside with children watching the parade from that. There seems to be a lot of different ways that people watch the parade and save their spots. Before duct tape, it was about putting chairs out on the sidewalks to save the spots. But it has become an issue that needs to be resolved. And the issue for this council to decide is which way should we resolve it? And basically, my resolution asked the Rose Festival Association to conduct a community outreach process to determine the best how to find solutions that provide greater access and viewing opportunities on a more equitable basis. And so it comes down to whether the city should do it or Rose Festival. My very strong preference, this is a issue that I believe best decided by the community, and that I would rather not impose punitive sanctions that would require the police to be out with their ticket books prior to Rose Festival. But failing every other option, that could be possibly one option. But I would like us as a community to be able to look at some broader solutions, some broader engagement processes. So,
Mr. Mayors and Commissioner Leonard, is there a possibility that the two of you could come together on something that you could both agree on in terms of a way forward?
Well, that's precisely what I was hoping that was understood in my remarks, is I have agreed with Mayor Potter to, if this passes today, to include an amendment that would include a work group that would work out of my office, that would include representatives of the Rose Festival Association, Portland neighborhoods, and other interests, and bring back a report of any recommendations, if any, to the City Council right after the first of the year. And I'm prepared to make that a part of the motion. I just have to say that I think it's inappropriate to have a private sector group oversee a process that involves public safety. It's not an appropriate, no disrespect intended to the Rose Festival Association, but included in the hundreds of communications I have are numerous comments that complaints in years past about this behavior has gone to the Rose Festival Association unanswered. They have a mission that isn't theirs to decide public safety or order on the sidewalks. That's the city's mission. I respect their role, but this is not an appropriate role for the Rose Festival Association. They should definitely be a part of it. They should definitely bring ideas forward, but it is not appropriate to have any one group run this process. It is a city responsibility.
And I count at least four existing ordinances that go to controlling how sidewalks are used and markings placed on public property. So my concern just doesn't go to this process. That's an extremely important part of it. But it also goes to the fact that I believe that this should not require police intervention and that there are existing ways to handle it. But by going out and talking with the community, by engaging the Rose Festival Association to do that, that I believe that we would come up with a better product and one that better meets the needs of the community in terms of the issue of equity about how people have access to our Rose Festival and actually all of the events.
So what if we were to have it co-chaired by the Rose Festival and Commissioner Leonard?
That'd be fine.
But still have the ordinance with the prohibition, the criminal, I mean the...
I think we need to pass this and send the message to the community that strictly speaking, the activity of taping off sidewalks is not condoned, endorsed, or supported by the city. Having I would like to do that.
How long?
And then, happily engage in a process with the Rose Festival Association that included all of the items you mentioned, Mayor Potter, and bring them back to the council.
So would you entertain the notion that, and to put the heat on the group that, to come up with something, would you entertain a notion of a time limit on this ordinance so that if there is an action from the group, it expires?
Sure.
So
because there will be. I mean, we'll bring back recommendations by the first of the year.
How long do you think it would take to do that?
The mayor has 6 months.
The resolution has 6 months.
And I'm happy to adopt that timeline and do it. And I mean, we will. I mean, this is obviously something I care a lot about. And we will focus our efforts in my office to bring in the group together soon. And I actually don't expect it to take 6 months. I mean, I think there are some pretty common sense approaches that I've heard to make some exceptions for some disadvantaged groups that I support. And I think we can probably come around that sooner. And I think actually the process will happen quicker with us involved.
Do you agree to a process that we would enact this? It would only last for 6 months. It would be co-chaired by Commissioner Leonard and the president of the Rose Festival Association. Is that something people could agree to as a compromise?
I don't know why we need to adopt the prohibition now and then possibly remove it or modify it in 6 months. I mean, we have a whole nother year until the Rose Festival comes around again. So why not just delay the prohibition?
Well, I'll
have the work group and then adopt their recommendations.
I'll tell you what I'd be prepared to do, and I thought about doing anyway, is postponing consideration of the ordinance at all until January in any form, and that the council direct me and to establish this group that includes a co-chair from the Rose Festival Association, and I can do it that way as well. But what I really don't want to do is to somehow send the message to the community that, with all due respect, Mayor Potter, your substitution does, that there may be some legitimacy to taping, because it's not. And it's a very serious issue. And so I'd like to avoid doing that. And I'm happy to go work with the interested parties and come back in January before we vote on anything.
You know what would be nice is to perhaps take some public testimony on it, and then we can make a decision.
That's a good idea.
There is a motion that either needs a second or will die. Okay, so the mayor's motion's been seconded.
So now we can take public testimony. How many people are signed up?
We have six people signed up. The first three, if you would come up, Steve Buckstein, William Stephen Humphrey, and Amanda Fritz.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Mayor Potter, members of the council, my name is Steve Buckstein. I'm with Cascade Policy Institute here in Portland. I am submitting written testimony, and on the back of it is a op-ed that I had published in the Oregonian on Friday dealing with this issue. And I am really glad to hear that there are some alternatives being looked at to this. And I just wanted to use this, as I called in my article, it's sort of a teachable moment for the council and for Portlanders. What's gone unsaid here, excuse me, is the reason, in my view, why these confrontations or potential conflicts occur. And that is two concepts. One is called the tragedy of the commons. As Commissioner Leonard has correctly pointed out, the sidewalks are public property, meaning they're owned by all of us, meaning nobody really takes responsibility for them. When I was a young child and I attended parades, I think before Commissioner Leonard, because I'm a little bit older, my family owned, or relatives of mine owned, a business along the parade route, and we got to sit up on the second floor looking out the window. And I always sort of wondered at that point why there was all this scrambling for good spots on the street, and yet nobody was scrambling for good spots in this building. And, of course, as I grew up and realized that it's because the sidewalk is public and the building is private. So you're dealing with the tragedy of the commons here. You're also dealing with a scarce resource, and that's where economics come in. Economics is the allocation, the science of allocating scarce resources. In 364 days a year in Portland, the sidewalks aren't scarce. The space isn't scarce. We all walk by each other, and nobody, you don't have confrontations, and nobody's trying to take a spot. As the parade comes up, you have a scarce resource. There isn't enough prime sidewalk space, in some people's opinion. And so you have these ad hoc attempts to reserve space, whether it's taping, whether it's putting up lawn chairs, whether it's getting there, you know, hours and hours before. And what economics will tell you, and again, this being Portland, I don't necessarily expect this to get too far, but what economics tells you is that basically with a scarce resource, the way you solve those disputes is through a pricing mechanism. The people who are willing to pay the most for the spots get the spots. And so my suggestion, and I would agree, I think, more with Mayor Potter's approach of looking at a commission involving the Rose Festival Association, is, and in the spirit of the duct tape controversy, is authorize official Rose Festival duct tape, specially produced, sell it for, say, $5 a foot, and only sell enough to provide, say, 20,000 feet along the parade route. The parade route's 4 miles long, about 40,000 feet. That would generate $100,000 for the Rose Festival. Some mechanism like that, you'd still be able to have handicapped people, any special group you want, there'd be plenty of space for them. But if anyone's willing to go out a week early and duct tape a spot, they ought to be willing to pay a few dollars to help make sure that the festival, that the parade continues into the future. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, my name is William Stephen Humphrey, and I thank you for letting me speak to you today about parade goers using tape to reserve their space on the public sidewalk. Now, Randy has already addressed a lot of the things I'm about to say, but I'd just like to be here and say hi because I've never been here, and I'm excited to be here. And so I want to go ahead and say it. But I'm in violent agreement with you, my friend. Okay. Now, not only am I the editor of the Portland Mercury newspaper, I'm a citizen who believes strongly in a sense of community. As one of the primary organizers of last Friday night's tape removal march, or as it's officially known, the pre-parade route beautification and equalization of viewing opportunity hoedown, I promise we'll have a better name next year, I feel like the practice of taping off the sidewalk by parade goers days in advance of the event is primarily a selfish act. As one parade goer asked me, what's wrong with me reserving a spot on the parade route for myself, my family, and 50 of my friends? Now, while this person truly thought he was being generous, he was actually putting his needs, his family, and his friends over the needs of thousands of parade goers. The sidewalks belong to everyone, and taping off a spot at the parade is tantamount to reserving a spot at the front of the line at the bank, DMV, or the new Transformers movie. As Portlanders, we already agree to a social contract that we are all equal and that we all share public space. These people are clearly violating that contract and with the city's permission. I personally have nothing to say bad to say about those who camp out on the sidewalks the night before the parade. In fact, I applaud their civic pep and enjoy the sense of community and camaraderie they bring to the streets. But is it really fair to these people, as well as those who show up on the day of the parade, to be shoved aside by those who feel they are entitled to a piece of sidewalk they taped off days in advance? I think that stinks. Now, there are those who say that stopping the tapers is messing with tradition. I love tradition, but tradition should never come at the expense of others. The real tradition is showing up for the parade early, enjoying each other's company, and sharing the spirit of community. Now, there are those who say that our pre-parade beautification committee should have waited for the council to vote on the matter before ripping up